Mr. Clarkson, reel 30.
And I've seen a fellow, I've been caught myself, but a chap out with his wife shopping of an evening round the arcade, and that's where I saw this happen. I knew the fellow. And the PO of the patrol says to a naval seaman, "Go up and tell that PO I want him." And so he goes up with this fellow who's talking with his wife, looking in the shop window, orders him over, and there the PO of the patrol takes his name, ship, and everything, and starts giving him a horrible choke-off in front of his wife for having a button undone on his coat, for having a raincoat on with the collar turned up, all that sort of thing. He followed me one night. I was single then, I didn't care much, but it was cold and I had kid gloves. Mustn't wear kid gloves. Wore woolen gloves. And I walked very quickly, and my routine used to be to walk right to South Sea of a night, right away out East Knee, and then call at the pubs on the way back, have a half in each pub. And I came back and I was walking up past the station, it'd be about 9:30 at night, and luckily I knew the patrol PO of that particular patrol. He was an old ship of mine, very nice chap. But he'd got this job in barracks for 3 years, you see. And all of a sudden, the patrol halted from the other side of the road. One of them came over and said, "The PO of the patrol wants you." I went over there and I'd slipped these gloves off, I guess what it was. And he said, got out his notebook and he said, "You've been reported," he said, "from walking past the South Parade Pier," he said, "with these gloves on." He said, get them off quick, George, and don't let it be seen, or else I'll have to take you into barracks and all that. And all right, and off they went. If I hadn't known him, I should have been whipped into barracks, marched in with a patrol, coming off the train there on a Sunday night. You're fed up, you've been on a weekend, and you come back, and there's the body snatchers waiting for you. Liberty ticket. If you've lost it, it's disastrous. You're marched into barracks.
And a small thing like, I presume kid gloves were officers' gloves, was that it? Or you weren't allowed to wear them? Uniform was woolen gloves.
Woolen gloves,
you were,
yes,
improperly dressed.
Improperly dressed, yes.
But they would actually pick you up for a minute detail,
yes,
like that.
I mean, this is miles away, I'm going to say, at South Sea, somewhere like that. They had patrols all over the place. Well, these patrols, they were sort of volunteer for the patrol because it was a home billet, and you stopped in barracks for about 3 years. You had that. Then the guard and the band and all people like that.
These were the cushy jobs that people...
That's right, yes.
What else? How could you have got into one yourself if you'd wanted, being a tradesman? Would you have found it easier?
There was a chief shipwright in charge of the shop there, and there were, I suppose... I don't think there were any joiners there, but there were that some were kept in there. If they were favourites, if they could escape drafts. For instance, not long after I'd been at the Red Sea, it was an awful job to stop at home or get a home billet. Everybody was at sea. We had a lot of ships then. And on one occasion, of course, they say there again, the chief shipwright in the office, he had the run of it, and he was in charge of everybody, and he could keep people in who he didn't want to go. People doing private jobs, from making little cabinets and all that sort of thing for the home, and perhaps the commission shipwright. These people were stopped there for about 3 years. Other poor devils who didn't know anybody, strangers, come in and out again. And on one particular occasion, there was another fellow in there with me. He was a diver too. And at dinner time, we were skylarking round outside the office during the dinner hours. And the phone call came through the chief ship riding side. Somebody for a cruiser on the China station, the Cape Town. And, Colombo, that was it, on the China station. And he came out of the shop and he said, what had happened? It was to tell him that a fella named Bagent was on draft for the Colombo. Immediate draft. So he didn't like this because Bagent was his friend. Bagent, he'd been in there nearly 3 years then, and China was a long way away. He came out of the office and saw us two there, and he said, nice ship going, he said, Colombo, China Station. He said, how'd you like to go there? I said, not at all. Lucky, he said, you might have to go there one day. And we both said that we didn't want to go, we didn't have anything. He wanted to volunteer, you see. So off he went. He went round to see the drafting master at arms to see if he could push somebody else in. And he came back again, and he was in the office. Now, this other fellow, Westlake, he didn't know he was in there, and he said to me, well, I wouldn't mind going to China Station, he said. He was single. He said, nice station, yeah. I wouldn't mind at all. Out come the chief and said, you volunteered. He said, report to the master at arms. And he went to China for 5 years. He done the commissioner out there, and he thought, well, he liked it, and so he volunteered for another one. But that was the way things went on. I was sent out to the Arrogant submarine depot ship that had to be brought round from Plymouth. And when I came back in again, that was the chief said, oh, he said, what are you doing back in here? 6 weeks afterwards, that was, we'd come back and paid off at the Dolphin. I said, I've come here to relieve some of your blokes. I said, I've been here about 3 years. Ordinary course of events, I should have been at the bottom of the list for foreign service. So with this other fella, having both come from the Red Sea, well, the chap hadn't been out quite as long as me, but there was a glaring case of keeping a chap in. Anyhow, off I went to the Arrogant. I was down at Plymouth for about 6 weeks and eventually brought this submarine depot ship back to Portsmouth, and we paid off. And I came in the barracks and the chief shipwright said, hello, he said, what are you doing back here again? I said, I've come in here to relieve some of your sods. I said, they'd been here about 3 years. Oh, he said, you know, you'd be finding yourself up a Scapa Flow before long. And I did. Yes, within a fortnight, I was up at Scapa, well, up at Ross Isle on the way to Scapa Flow, to the Royal Sovereign. And it was sickening to see people coming in from one foreign commission and straight away on another one. Yes. In a few years afterwards, it was just the opposite. A commander, a friend of my wife's, and I, we know, and a brother, actually, of this lady that's calling tomorrow, he met us when we were married, and he said, do you know, he said, I sit down and listen to you talk, and he said, about the different places you've been. He said, I'm a commander and I'm nearly due to retire now from Leon Solent. And he said, I've never been out of England in my life.
Yes. Amazing. At some point someone must have got wise to these people, did they? That people had been in the barracks 3, maybe 4, 5 years?
Oh, yes.
The commander or somebody on the station would find out, surely?
No, it
could
seemed
people work it out indefinitely.
No, it seemed to me it just took its course that if you tried to bring this to anybody's notice, that you were suddenly on draft, you were pushed out somewhere.
There could happen that there would be men who were never on a foreign station at all, perhaps near enough. They got into a cushy billet in barracks and were able
that's right.
to...
That's right. And there's some of them they do 3 years, 3 years in barracks, where another poor soul couldn't do 3 months. It was, that was a real racket.
What was the actual life like in the barracks then? What about the differences? Well, I mean, A, you said earlier you could get home. If you were married, it was important. You were free in that sense. What was the routine in the barracks, the working daily routine?
Well, of course, according to the job you had, we used to work, got to work at 8 o'clock, would be, yes, 8 o'clock. Worked till 12, quarter past one, till 4 o'clock. Now, when you went ashore, you went ashore at 4:30, if you weren't duty, of course, you'd be about, according to the numbers that were in there, you were split into shifts, you see, so that you actually would be duty every 5 nights. That was pretty good, that was. And when you were duty, you ran the fire brigade to start off with. You always had fire practice out with the fire engine. And any jobs, of course, that cropped up. Even to cleaning drains and any job that came along if you were duty. But otherwise, at 4:30, you used to be all hanging around corners until the bugle went. And then you see them all nip out, and the officer of the day would stand outside outside the guard room, and as you went by, you'd all salute as you went by. In a ship, of course, it's permission to carry on the saucer, please. But there were so many of them going out. And they were watching to see that you were properly dressed, that your tie was right, that you didn't have an unauthorised collar on or anything like that. And you used to heave a sigh of relief when you got out the gate. And if you were standing in Queen Street at a time when the colours came down at sunset and the bugle went, you stood in the street to attention, saluted if you were a PO. It was, you were more or less on the job. Always, all the time you were in uniform.
Yeah, it wasn't in that sense, apart from the fact that you were living ashore and you were getting home every night except 1 and 5, I mean, the constraints were still just as strong.
It weighed very, very heavily. It did. It seemed as if you were under somebody's eyes all the time. It was, I don't know. I'll tell you, there's something that got so used to me calling people sir. Always. We do all right. I think the Navy would have been a wonderful training then for anybody who had to touch their forelock to the squire.
Did you resent that at the time? Can you remember? Did you just become part of your way of life?
Well, actually, it was. You were trying to please everybody. You didn't want to fall out with anybody. You didn't want to do the wrong thing.
Was that always true of the Navy, more or less? That was a striking feature of Navy life.
Yes.
Whatever you were.
Yes. Apart from crawling, you didn't crawl, but you done it to keep out of trouble. You weren't trying to do it to gain anything, but to keep away from trouble.
Yes. And of course, they could punish you and withdraw your privileges, which were things that you were used to in shore life. It was a privilege, effectively, in the Navy.
Oh,
things
yes.
like getting permission to go ashore, sir.
That were even on the ship, yes. Carry on shore, please. Yeah.
Can I just talk briefly, because we're on the barracks here, and I just wonder if I can just bring it in. When you were in the barracks at different times, you wouldn't have maybe had a home ashore in You weren't married, so to speak. So you would be living in the barracks while waiting to go to your next station, next ship posting. What was the accommodation, for instance?
Awful.
Awful?
Yes. In the first mess I was in the barracks, there used to be 114 mess, rather, PO's mess was always 114 there. But like a barrack room, you had a bed with a wire mattress on, and you laid your hammock on there. And then that had to be made up every day before you went out.